Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich, and you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast. We're talking about working money doesn't suck, and oh yeah, so we don't get sued. This is for entertainment purposes only. We're fresh off the FinCon conference in Dallas, and while there, we had the chance to interview a few folks who are doing interesting things in the money space. On today's show, we chat with Ryan Inman, who's a fee-only financial planner that specializes in working with folks you might expect to be good with money, or maybe not. And since we didn't say this while chatting with him, but if you're new, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. And if you've been enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and hit us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. This lets people know we're worth listening to. And if you do leave a review, we may read yours on the show. So since we are recording live, there's some noise in the background. That's what happens at conferences. People are talking, pollying it up. I think people say pollying somewhere, if not talking it up. But yeah, we hope you enjoy this chat with Ryan, and we'll see you next week. Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we cover personal finance and career advice for millennials and beyond, with the hope we don't bore them to sleep.
And today, all the noise that you're hearing behind you is we're live recording at FinCon Dallas, FinCon 17. We've got a great guest with us today, Ryan Inman. I think I'm saying that last name correctly, of Physicians Wealth Services. And why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
Hey guys, how you doing? Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I will hopefully not bore you to death.
We won't let you. No problem.
No pressure. Everyone, wake up. So my name is Ryan Inman. I'm a fee-only financial planner for young physicians over at Physician Wealth Services. And I also have a up-and-coming podcast, Financial Residency, where it's to provide all the financial education that physicians didn't receive while in training.
So tell me a little bit about, I've heard it before, but what is fee-only planning? And what's the difference? Is there?
Yeah, no, good question, man. So there's back in the day, it used to be a bunch of commission sales, right? You can think of like Boiler Room, where they were buy this, sell this. Well, industry started to move away from that and went to a fee-based model, where I can offer you financial planning advice. I can also transact in insurance, and I could also transact in investments. And about 97% of anyone who calls himself a financial planner or financial advisor today is fee-based. With that model, there's a lot of conflicts of interest. So if we were talking and I said, hey, you know, Rich, I really think you need this insurance product, you don't exactly know how I'm getting compensated. I'm actually getting paid by an insurance company behind the scenes on transacting this. So am I really giving you the best advice because I really want to help you? Or was there a better product out there or insurance product out there that I could have given to you or presented to you but made less money?
Right. Do you have any advice for someone who's negotiating with a person like this, how they can protect themselves? Are there networks that you would recommend?
Yeah, so choose a fee-only advisor is where I'm going with this. So okay. Less than 3% of all advisors are fee-only. And what that means is, you know, Rich and I are working together and we have a client agreement and it says our fee is $500, let's say. I know and Rich knows that that's all I'm going to make with our relationship. If I'm recommending, I can't sell insurance. And if I recommend insurance or a CPA or a state planning attorney, I don't get compensated at all for it. I don't even get a $5 Starbucks gift card, right?
So how does someone even know if they need a financial planner?
That's another good question. So if you're the type of person that doesn't want to spend time researching and understanding, you know, finances in general, if you need someone to help hold you accountable, that's another big one. And if you're a high income earner or you have a significant amount of net worth, and you don't know if you're fully protected, you really should reach out to someone that can at least steer you in the right direction. It might not be full-blown, like, financial planning, but it's at least a step in the right direction.
So I was going to ask as a follow-up, is there a financial threshold? Because someone may say, well, I make $50,000. Do I really need a financial planner? I only associate that with people who are making millions.
Yeah, no, I wish we were all making millions, but, you know,
as obviously. As do I, sir.
Yes. Figure that out for us, would you?
I'm actively looking into it right now.
No one will go to sleep in our podcast here if we could all tell each other how to make millions. So if you were to think about a threshold, if there's enough wealth to protect, someone should look out. And that's going to be really, this is the where personal comes into personal finance, right? If, you know, there's going to be some inheritance coming through, you might only make $40,000 a year, but if you're going to get some inheritance, six-figure inheritance, $100,000, $200,000, you should probably make sure you at least know what you're looking at. There's a lot of advisors out there that have minimums for account sizes. So it'll say like, hey, we have a $250,000 minimum. That's going to mean that without $250,000, they won't work with you. There's advisors like myself that I don't have a minimum. You could start with $500, but my requirement is that you're a physician. Okay. Right? So there's all sorts of different advisors for all different types of people, for all different types of jobs. It's finding someone out there. And there's great organizations like the XY Planning Network is a great organization of a bunch of young fee-only financial planners that help a very broad range of either age or job. NAFA is another great industry.
You said NAFA, so that NAFA?
NAPFA.
Okay.
That is an industry organization that you can go and search for a financial planner.
Got it.
Yeah. And along those lines, is a financial planner someone you meet with once a year, quarterly? Is it, again, back to the personal finance? Do I schedule one meeting, and would that be enough to set up my financial plan? And then what does that dynamic look like?
Yeah, so everyone is different. All planners are different. It's just like how we're talking fee-based versus fee-only. Even inside of fee-only, everyone has got their own way to run their business, right? Everyone's podcasts are different in some way.
Right.
So the way I do it is I actually have 5 to 6 meetings with the client before I actually give them their financial plan. That is kind of rare. Most people will meet 2 or 3 times, but I really like to get to know my client. I like to talk through their goals. I want to understand what is important to them, what would give them a truly fulfilled life before I can even get to the numbers. Heck, the first 2 meetings, we don't even talk numbers. We just get to know each other and make sure that I truly understand, you know, this person and what they really want, and how, and I actually help them formulate goals. A lot of advisors don't do this. This is, you know, an in quotes, touchy-feely, that some advisors just aren't comfortable with those conversations. They just want to, they're trained in numbers. They just want to work in the numbers. You know, but some advisors will do some of the stuff that I'm doing.
So have you had to walk away from potential clients because during those initial meetings, you were like, we're just not going to click?
All the time. Literally all the time. The way I've built my practice, if you will, is I have a prospect meeting. We talk for 30 minutes. It's a free introductory meeting. I say, I have 2 questions for you. You have as many questions as you want from me. You know, no charge. Just, I want to get to know each other. If I don't feel the vibe in that meeting, I don't even invite them to become a client. I just leave it there.
And so what are some of the things that would make you walk away? Now, of course, someone could be a jerk. They could stink. But are there things where you're like, oh, no, I just can't deal with this?
So the stink doesn't matter because I work virtually with everyone. Yeah. Right. So if I can smell them, we got problems. Right.
Right.
But it's more of, there's 2 things. One is, can I really help this person? Right. And I can't help every physician. I've turned down older physicians because I don't enjoy working in the retirement piece. I've had enough experience in that to know, like, if you're in retirement or just about to retire, like, you're going to build the plan and then it's kind of a drawdown strategy. And honestly, it's really boring. I'm not motivated. That doesn't get me excited to wake up and go, yeah, it's Monday. Let's go.
No.
Right. It doesn't excite me. So making sure I can help the person. The other side is, like, are you an a-hole? Like, do I really want to work with you or not? Am I going to be stoked that Rich is calling me on the phone? Or am I going to be like, oh, man, what's Rich want again? You know? And I never want to have that conversation. I never want to feel that when the client's calling me. So that's kind of my screening process.
Got it.
And I'd like to take a deeper dive on 2 topics. So you had brought up insurance and investment, and we had talked offline a little bit about investment theory. But I want to start with insurance. What are your thoughts there? What are the risks? And what should be people, millennials, be thinking about as far as insurance needs?
Yeah, so with insurance, I'm going to keep it high level and talk about term insurance. And then there's the permanent side, which I won't go too much into. But with term insurance, you're basically taking out a life policy on yourself that says, I'm going to take out a $500,000 policy for 30 years. okay, and say it goes active the day we're recording this, and 1 year from now you unexpectedly pass, that policy will pay out that $500,000 to whoever your beneficiary was. It could go up to, so we did a 30-year term, in year 29, if you were to unexpectedly pass, the $500,000 would go to someone. Usually if you're married, it goes to your spouse. You could have, if you have plenty of assets and your spouse is going to be taken care of, it could go to your kids. But with term insurance, I find that it's the best insurance someone can have on themselves to protect their family. If you're single, you're 22, and you're making $40,000-$50,000 a year, you have no expectation of getting married, you know, anytime in the near future, you don't need term insurance. You can pretty much self-insure by just getting a nice emergency fund together, but you really don't need insurance. Insurance is, if someone is, think about it just from a high level here, if someone depends on you for your income, you need insurance. That's the most simple form you can do it. And then how much, there's calculators online that can help you walk through all that. One of the popular strategies that insurance salesmen don't like you to know about is layering term insurance. So what that is let's say you needed $1.5 million of term insurance. You're 30, you make 75 grand, you've got two kids. Say it ends up that you needed $1.5 million. You could get a policy for 15 years, a policy for 20 years, and a policy for 25 years at $500,000 each. And what that'll do is, as opposed to just getting $1.5 million policy at 25 years, is it allows you to pay smaller premiums because there's shorter periods of time. So it saves you money in the near term. And then as you hit that 15-year mark, and that first $500,000 drops off, you've really self-insured by that point. You've had 15 years of accumulating assets to get to that level. And why that's important is, if you were to take out that $1.5 million policy for 25 years, that might cost you an extra $1,500, $2,000 a year. Like, imagine what you could do with an extra $100, $150 a month.
I can do quite a few things.
I know you had mentioned investment calculators to figure out that amount. Is there an easy formula times 10 or a multiplier to know how much money I need for my family? So I know we don't like to think like that, but I have two kids, $75,000 a year. Is there a quick multiplier to know this is what my family would need in my absence?
Yes and no. I don't like giving real general, and I know this is all pretty general, but even going more general than 20 times your salary and you're good. Yeah, you could kind of look at it that way. But the calculator, I mean, literally just, and I'll shoot you one so you can put it in your show notes. But it's, six, seven inputs, and you just put in, how much you how old you are, what your income is, what your, balance of all your assets are right now. And it'll just spit out a nice little answer, very clean. You don't have to go run it through any advisor, but you will have to go through an insurance agent or an insurance broker to buy this stuff. And this is where that industry is super archaic and fragmented, and they exploit the crap out of it, unfortunately.
Again, tying it back to that personal finance and being knowledgeable about the
exactly.
products that you want. You had mentioned there, for somebody who's single, and we have a lot of those people on the show, one of those people on the show as well, is as far as self-insuring through an emergency fund. I hadn't heard that before. So what does that look like? What's that dynamic?
Yeah, so if no one, and it's a way I just maybe term the phrase here, but if no one depends on you for your income, if you are single, you have no likelihood of getting married in the next few years or having a kid or anything like that. And so literally you're just living your life, right? Enjoying life. You want to make sure that if anything happens to you, that you can still cover any of the bills that are coming up. So I know obviously you guys have talked probably about emergency funds and all that, but I would build a bigger buffer if you were single and you didn't have any coverage behind it. Disability coverage would actually probably come in more important. 1 in 4 people, it's just facts, are likely to become disabled during their life. So I'd be more looking at it as, if we were working and I was your planner, I'd say, hey, look, term insurance might not be the most applicable. You should really probably look at disability, because if no one's there to take care of you, you don't have a spouse, income to live off of, then if you were to become disabled, your income stops. We've got a problem. So I would actually look at disability insurance more as the important insurance to get than to look elsewhere.
And perhaps this is all interrelated, but again, the other topic I said I want to talk about is investment theory. You had mentioned also active versus passive. Can you talk about some thoughts you would have on that as far as investments go?
Yeah, so the one thing I would say that maybe ties us in a little bit to each other, insurance is insurance, investments is investments.
Okay.
Never mix the two, right? A lot of your listeners, when they go and start talking about insurance and say they're like, hey, man, this is great. I really need to go get some term insurance. And they go talk to an agent or a broker. They might get pitched, and it's high. It's the likelihood is very high that they're going to get pitched other things. Oh, this is going to be a great. You need this whole life policy because, you know, this is an investment in your future, and this will take care of you for life. No. Insurance is insurance. Investments are investments.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, because that's very likely that a conversation could come up.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
So with respects to investments, there's Nobel Prize winning research out there that says passive investing is better in the long run than active investing. And what that is we're going to look at an index. So just to keep it simple, I'm going to look at the S&P 500. The S&P 500 index, there's funds or ETFs out there that will mimic and buy what the market is doing, the S&P 500. The whole goal of that ETF, let's say, exchange-traded fund, is to mimic what the 500 biggest companies that make up the S&P 500 are doing. Its goal is to not beat the market. Its goal is to let the market momentum and returns dictate what your returns will be. Market's up 10%. That ETF, hopefully it's extremely cheap, you know, maybe 8, 9, 10 basis points, which is like 0.08, 0.09%, 0.1%. Hopefully that's within very, very, very low tracking error of that 10% gain. So if the market makes 10%, you're hoping that fund makes 10%. That's essentially from a high level what passive investing is. Active investing are the guys that are like, invest in my fund, I beat the market.
So I think of the movies where you see him on the trading floor like, buy, 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 sell, sell, sell. I mean, that's pretty active. That's probably as active as it gets.
I mean, so when I was talking about the beginning, I love that, man.
I heard that doesn't happen anymore, by the way. I think that's what I said in the reference.
In the movies back in the day.
Yeah. So like when I said boiler room with the commissions and how the fees, that's how that was back in the day. Now it's not really like that, but I'm going to keep that mental image because I like that. I do like that. So active management guys, they'll own their own mutual funds. And let's just, I don't want to state any because I don't want anyone to actually go look it up. But let's just say there's an active fund and they say, hey, you know, we've beat the market 7 out of the last 10 years, but we charge, you know, 1.5% or 2%, but we're worth our fee because we consistently can outbeat the market. Over time, they can't. How many Warren Buffetts are there in the world?
One.
That guy's amazing, right? He can consistently beat the market. He is a unicorn, right? There's not a lot of Warren Buffetts around, and that's the way I like to look at this kind of analogy from a high level. If someone's telling you they can beat the market, they might be able to in 1 year. They might even be able to over 3 years. Some guys are good enough to do it over 5. Give them 20 years, not a chance.
Yeah, it's going to balance out.
Not a chance. And that's what people need to be investing for. Don't worry about the minor movements in the market. Invest for the long term. Just know that you're going to put $25, $50, $500, whatever it is away every month, and don't worry about what it's actually doing. Just know that in the long run, the markets move 7%, 8%. Like over time, obviously there's years where it's down 40%, and there's years it's up 30%, but don't sweat it. Just keep putting money away. Dollar cost average in, and let the markets dictate the return over the long run. You'll have a lot more money that way.
So let me ask you this. I don't know how many of our listeners are physicians, but what are some of the takeaways that you think you see, even in what I would think are well-paid individuals? Do you still see people struggling with their budgets? Are there still people out there putting rims on their cars? I mean, I don't even know what a physician lifestyle would look like, but is it still translate that they struggle with their day-to-day budgets, or what are you seeing out there that might translate to the average person?
So the thing is the average person might actually have more financial knowledge than a physician. Which is interesting because physicians, all the ones I know, are brilliant people. Like truly just experts in their field, they're brilliant people. But they have no formal training in finance. They didn't take up any finance class through decades of school.
Is there a funny story that you can anonymously share?
Oh man, that's a tough one.
Yeah,
that's a tough one.
It's funny. It might be specific. So.
Yeah. So I'll go. It's maybe not funny, but I'll go with the example that I had someone come to me that thought that their 403B was a scam. Now, 403B is the same thing as a 401K, but at a nonprofit. They're working for a hospital, and they had previously been burned by an insurance salesman selling them some whole life. They got kind of spooked, and they said, you know what? This finance thing isn't for me. I'm literally going to shove all my money into a checking account. I'll figure it out later. And she thought that this 403B was a scam. Now, this is an employer-sponsored plan that they actually matched.
Wow.
And for 5 years until we started working together, she put nothing in there.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, not a funny story, right? But this is something that, you know, is real. It's real.
So, great conversation. Good job. You did keep it fun. I know it was informative. So.
Well, Rich is still awake, so I think I did something right.
Where can the people
I'm over
you?
Here like, where can I get this next Red Bull, bro?
The social media, the website, where can the people find you?
Yeah, so my business is Physician Wealth Services. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Physician Wealth. And then you can find my show on iTunes and Stitcher. It's called Financial Residency and financialresidency.com.
All right, Ryan, it's been a great show. It's a pleasure having you on. Rich, anything to close out with out the Red Bull?
Thanks for joining us, man.
That's all I got. I appreciate having me on. Thank you. Thank you.